How do you win the confidence of others? Hello, welcome to Good Word. I'm David Thomas, your host again. Happy to have with me my two colleagues, Brant Berglund and Daryl Bigger. We have been together for quite a few weeks now, about, I think this is our 10th week. We've been talking through a grand theme, that of restoration, how it is that the world fell, that life has fallen away from its original condition because of sin, but that God is working in history for restoration. And this week we are looking again at Jesus, particular how he won the confidence of people. And I think it's almost so obvious as to be, as not necessary to state it, that if you win confidence, the confidence of somebody, you become far more able to help transform or rescue or help them. And so, gentlemen, I'd like us to think and maybe talk a little bit first about what this thing is that we call confidence and how it is that we generate it. How do you win the confidence of somebody else? And then we'll ask the question of how Jesus did it and how effective that proved to be. So,
well, there are different criteria for different people, aren't there? Some people lend credence to those whose ideas make sense to them. Some people are not so caught up in the ideology as they are in behavior. Does this person live like I think they should live?
Okay.
So either deeds or thoughts, those are become ways to gain confidence for different kinds of people.
We use the word a confidant, somebody that we can share our deepest secrets and troubles with, because we know they will listen and we know they will keep secret what we share with them, and that they will protect our feelings. That only comes over quite a while of time building a rapport, showing yourself trustworthy, maybe with things that are less important, and then they can divulge to you the things that are more important, the confidence.
A few weeks ago, Dave, you talked about the importance of listening to other people, that identifying with someone, having believing that they understand you is part of that, building confidence with them.
Yeah, I asked myself this question earlier, and I wrote down some words that I'm going to just read to you. Fidelity, honesty, reliability, constancy, vulnerability, are those components that, and by vulnerability I mean transparency, the willingness to be, to enter into somebody else's experience, are those words that connect in your mind to confidence, winning confidence? I like what you said, Daryl, that the knowledge, you know, I was thinking, if you had to have your car repaired and you took it to a mechanic and he didn't know the names of the various components, it would not fill you with confidence to leave it there, compared to if he explained to you not only what they are, but how they work. Mm-hmm. See? So knowledge is definitely a component. How long have you been working on cars would be another question for me. You know,
experience.
Well, I just got started. All right. Well, then maybe we'll look for somebody else. That's why I like old cars, by the way. They're very simple. You can fix them. The new ones require computers, and I'm not in that. Luke 5:15 is interesting. It says of Jesus, "But now even more the report about him went abroad, and great crowds gathered to hear him and be healed of their infirmities." So here is an allusion, I suppose, to the fact that when people heard the stories of Jesus' work, and they heard testimonials from people who had been there and experienced it, that they now come in droves. And isn't that what confidence does? When people have confidence, they come in perhaps ever-increasing numbers?
I think that's probably true. And if I can use a rather worldly sort of example, just think about professional ball teams. When the team is playing well and their fans believe that they're in for a good show, they will pay for the ticket. They will come and watch. It's when they think their team isn't worth watching, they'll forsake their season tickets and they'll walk away, and fair-weather sort of fans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm thinking that I spent some time on the East Coast, and I'm a somewhat of a Red Sox fan. And the joke is that until the Red Sox won the World Series a few years ago, there were people living their whole lifetimes in that expectation. So they were diehard fans, Brant, no matter what happened.
Yeah.
They were still going to be back next year. And a funny way, you know, that the year after the Red Sox won that, the newspaper noted that quite a few older men died, and they actually theorized that the sense of urgency to hold on for another year was gone, so they just gave up and died. But I don't know if you can ever prove that. See, I have a hard question for you. What happens to the confidence people might put in you if you fail them? And the question comes right along with that. How do you recover confidence that has been lost?
I think it depends on the level of confidence that we're talking about. But so often confidence is like a wall that is built brick at a time, very difficult to establish. You know, it takes long periods of time, but it can come crashing down with one wallop. And I fear that the fall of confidence often is not commensurate with how long it and how difficult it is to build up.
Wow. You remind me that outside of Boston, I used to go back way to the airport years ago when I lived there. And there's a wall that's kind of a brick wall that's kind of wavy, I guess. It's along a very busy road, a street, and it protects the housing, and they made it kind of wavy to stabilize it. But there's this one corner where people on many occasions have lost control and they've crashed into that brick wall. Now, the brick wall is always rebuilt with the same bricks, but you notice that it's not the same as the original wall. You can see that, oh, there was a hole there, the mortar is different, or the way the bricks are laid is different. And this thing has like 6 or 8 of these places where you see, and I'm wondering if that's a story of confidence. Do we ever build back confidence? See? I raise that question as an unhappy question, because if we are participating in the restorative work of God on this earth, it seems to me that winning confidence and retaining it are two things that we ought to think about pretty seriously.
Some of your words you used earlier fit here for me.
Okay.
Consistency, reliability, the cumulative experiences we have with someone allow us to let go of an occasional act or experience that confronts what the consistent pattern was. This is, it seems to me, one of the challenges we face in sharing who God is with other people. That if they don't have a cumulative series of experiences with God, they get very mistrusting with any little thing that doesn't look or sound right. Mm. But as we develop that relationship over time, it gives us a foundation on which we can understand an aberration or an apparent problem from time to time. And that's true with one another as well.
Now, in the lesson publication, it used the words social capital. That when you engender confidence in people, you build up this thing called social capital, which actually is very useful, because it allows people to have confidence in you when without that they might not have confidence in you. Like I am late for a meeting, but if I am routinely on time, people will presume what?
You had a good reason for being late. Yeah, something happened beyond your control.
Yeah, that I'm not being derelict or I'm not being disinterested. It's something they know, because he's there all the time and he's regular about being there, responsible about being there. That we know that it's not dereliction of duty. It's not disinterest. This is something else that has intervened. Mm. And hopefully when I arrive, I'll be able to.
But that assumes quite a relationship is necessary to be built up. And often I think in today's culture, we don't build up the same sorts of relationships because our connectivity isn't the same as it used to be one-on-one.
So how do you see Jesus building confidence?
Consistency, reliability.
Integrity.
Mm-hmm.
What he preached and how he lived were the same. The teachings that he asked the people to follow were exactly what he carried out in his life. That sort of harmony is difficult to.
So actions backed up with, words backed up with actions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it when we tell people, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
An incongruence.
Sure.
We don't like incongruities much.
No.
I'm intrigued that when you have confidence in somebody, isn't it true that you allow them much greater influence in your life than when they don't have confidence? And is that the key to the restoration here?
Hmm.
You think that's what's behind the acts of Jesus, the effectiveness of Jesus?
There are some people who are even more prone in that direction than others. Some people tend to be more trusting, rely on authority figures more than others. But it is true for everybody.
So if we, if social capital is important in the whole process of transformation as being instituted by God, what do you think Christians can do to create that? And even more precisely, what do you think congregations could do to do that? I remember when I was in college back in the dark ages, there was a friend of mine who came out of New York City, on the tail end of some of the disturbances of the late 60s, civil rights things, and I'll never forget, he told me that the church he was part of was shut down by people in the neighborhood. They said, we don't want you here because you do nothing for us. We don't even know you. And that has stuck in my mind as a serious thing, that there was no interaction between that congregation and the neighborhood, so that there was no confidence. There was suspicion that you take our money and you send it away. And they had to reorient themselves and start working in the neighborhood to do something to build confidence. And I guess, I'm thinking about that. What can we do as individuals and as congregations to build confidence?
I had a mentor for a while in some of my early years of pastoring who said, he challenged us as clergy and laity within Christian communities, how many friends do you have who are not connected with your congregation? How many close friends do you make? And the challenge was that many of us said, no, we form our closest bonds with those within the community of faith. It's a natural thing. It's not bad. Yeah. It's simply that we do it to the exclusion of creating relationships with those who don't share our faith. Yeah. That's where I'd start.
Yeah, I find that people who I have confidence in, I give them a lot of play, a lot of influence in my life, where people who I don't have confidence in, they can talk until the proverbial cows come home, and it doesn't make any difference to me at all. And it is a sobering thing. I mean, it's a challenging thing to ask ourselves how as individuals and maybe even as congregations and religious communities we can live in a way that allows people to develop confidence, not only in us but in the message that drives us. And I think those two things have to be pretty well connected.
So. And this generation of young people is precisely interested in that very thing.
And particularly interested.
Yes.
Although I will escape this by saying this, you know, that every generation has to earn its keep at some point, and every young generation has not yet done that. We'll be watching to see how they do, and I say that in a good spirit. Mm. Anyway, thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your commentaries today. Thanks to David Olson, our engineer, and my thanks to those of you who listen to The Good Word. For The Good Word, I'm David Thomas.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.